So if you're a reader of the Bible and you're familiar with anything to do with the Bible, you'll notice it takes a lot of time to tell us stories of people that lived in this world. So there's loads of stories that it follows of people's lives. And tonight I want to look at Jacob. Now, Jacob is quite a personal one for me. I've found the story of Jacob probably one of the most helpful and relatable to me personally in my own Christian life. And maybe there's some of you that feel the same. You look at him and you say, that's me. We'll find that out tonight. But it's interesting that this is the man that will go on to be called Israel. If you know anything about the Bible, that is a significant name. It is the very name of the people of God. So I don't think that's a coincidence. It's telling us something. And I hope by the end of the sermon, you'll see just how significant this man's life is. And it will have a lot to say to us. And I hope it's going to be helpful. So there's just three questions tonight about Jacob. We're looking at the life of Jacob. Three questions about Jacob. Firstly, the obvious one is, who is he? Who is Jacob? And to find that out, we just need to look at his name. It's all in his name. Now, nowadays, people call their children's names because it sounds nice and so on. I was going to find some not very great names that people use today as examples, but I thought that's probably not a good idea. They might be sitting in this church. So I'm not going to do that. But we know there's silly names today. People name people after all sorts of things. In the Bible, the names are not more significant. It's much more significant. It's saying something about the person, their character, something about them. So let's give Joseph as an example. Joseph is a Bible name, and it means God will increase. Now, I quite like the meaning of that name. But what does Jacob mean then? What does Jacob mean? Jacob means he catches by the heel. Interesting. He grabs by the heel. What a definition for your name. Very random at first, it seems. But it's when you read his birth, he's literally doing that. It's not random at all. He's literally grabbing his twin brother Esau by the heel. He's holding on to the heel of his twin brother who comes out first. So it's very literal, isn't it? But it's picturing something much deeper about Jacob. Jacob is a deceiver. He's a cheater. That's what the name means. And just think about it. Why would you want to grab someone by the heel in life? If I'm ever going to grab someone by their heel, what am I doing? Well, I'm probably going to hurt them. I'm going to trip them up. I'm going to maybe try and get in front of them. But why would you ever grab someone by the heel? Well, imagine a foot race. You'd get an idea of why someone's doing it. You'd want to maybe take something from them. So it's telling us that this Jacob means he's out for himself. He'll grab what he wants, when he wants. It's all about him. It doesn't matter who he hurts. You're getting an idea of the man. But there's more. Because to think, when you're grabbing someone by the heel, you're coming from behind, aren't you? They don't know you're coming. So it's telling us that to do these things, he's going to lie. He's going to be sneaky. He's going to sneak up on you when you weren't expecting it. Now, I think the most shocking thing about Jacob is this. When you read Genesis, the name Jacob reminds you of someone. Who else grabs by the heel in Genesis? Satan. The serpent. What's the promise said in Genesis 3? You'll bruise him in his heel. It's talking about what Satan's going to do to Jesus. So the picture you're getting of Satan here, of Jacob here, is he's just like Satan. What a man. What a man to be meeting. Not a nice guy. I think I understand why the name Jacob is not the most popular name. I haven't met too many Jacobs in my life. It's not a nice name, and it's not picturing a nice person. Is it too strong for him, though? Is that a bit harsh? Well, as you read about his life, I'm just going to give you one episode that catches Jacob in action, the heel catcher in action. He's got his dad, he's got his brother, and he's got his mum. And his brother is the older brother. Jacob's the younger. And in that time, the older brother had these beautiful rites that they kept very closely. It was called the birthright. And you wanted that, because if you had the birthright, you would be the head. You would get double what your other siblings got. So Esau's doing all right there. He's got the birthright. But Jacob's thinking, I could do with that. So what does he do? Well, his dad is passing away. He's losing his sight. He hasn't got long left. And he wants to bless Esau before he goes. And Jacob with his mum tag team, and Jacob pretends to be Esau. He takes advantage of his poor dad's poor eyesight, and if you read it, he lies quite a lot. It's not just once. He even says, your God has blessed me with... He lies even about God blessing him. So Jacob is lying. And poor Esau loses out and misses out on his birthright. And his dad is fuming. Esau is so angry, he now wants to kill Jacob. So this is Jacob in action. He's doing it against his own family, his nearest and his dearest. And it's summed up with Esau saying in tears, is he not rightly named Jacob? He's cheated me twice. This is Jacob. Selfish, self-dependent, self-sufficient. He doesn't know God. He doesn't trust God. And it's important. Why am I kind of pushing this tonight? Because I think Jacob is one of the clearest pictures of a sinner in the Bible. I think this gets what sin really is. Because we think, when we hear sin, we think of actions that we do. So I've lied, that's a sin, which it is. But I think at its heart, this is sin. Sin is Jacob. Sin is that kind of lifestyle where you live for yourself at heart. My way for me, it's that kind of thinking. I don't need God, I don't want God. I'm living for me, my way. That's Jacob. And if you go back to Genesis 3, when sin first entered the world, you'll see that is exactly what sin is. So the point I'm trying to drive home to us tonight is this is us. We are Jacob. Me, you, we're heel catchers at heart. Now, maybe you think, we're nice in this world, actually. There's lots of nice things that happen in the world. We do good for one another, yes. But I think a nice example of it is something like The Apprentice show. Now, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I don't know if anyone here watches The Apprentice, but I love it because there's two teams. They're trying to earn this kind of winning of being a business partner. And there's two teams, and you see them on a task. And they're best friends on the task because they're all working together to win. So it's like they've been the best friends their whole life. They're joking, they're laughing together, they're having the great time. And then it gets to one team losing and they all have to come into the boardroom. And now it's suddenly everyone out for themselves. And the change that happens is a great insight into human nature. Because now the best friends are turning on each other, shouting, bringing up stuff that happened in the game or whatever it is, I'm calling it a game, in the task, and it's like they were never friends in the first place. Do you know what happened? It was the minute someone was potentially going to get in the way of my blessing. That's when it's telling us that I'm living for me ultimately. Yes, I'm nice, but when it comes down to it, we're a world of Jacobs, and I think this is the reason why there's such atrocities in the world. It all comes back to this point. Why is there war? Why is there anything that's done against anyone? This is the heart of it. We're Jacob's at heart. And it's so serious. Why I'm trying to get this across tonight is because it's not just about being against others. The issue is not just horizontal. This is against God. God made everything. God made that person that Jacob hurt. This is actually directly against God. You could view Jacob in his life as he's on this collision course against God. Everything he's doing horizontally is building up to this point when he's going to face God one day. It's serious. It's actually, Jacob's path is actually a path to hell. That's what we're supposed to think as we see Jacob. And that's why I really want to pause for a minute before we go any further and ask, do you honestly see this in yourself? Because sometimes, even as I'm speaking about it now, I'm thinking, wait, do we really believe that? Do I really believe that I am like that? Because if you don't see that, we may as well stop this sermon. Because nothing of Christianity will make sense to you. If you don't see that there's a problem with you, then you might as well go no further with the message about Jesus and the cross. There's no point. Because you need to see there's an issue in your very nature, in your heart, and it's a problem. I didn't come to Christ until I saw something of that in myself. So I just really want to ask the question, do you see anything of Jacob in yourself? If you do, then as we're thinking about this man Jacob, we're supposed to be thinking he needs help. Someone needs to stop him. He's on a rampage. It's not going to end well. You're supposed to be looking at him as he's getting his brother and cheating his dad. You're supposed to be thinking, no, someone must stop him. And the great news about this story of Jacob is this. God will meet with him and change him. He will be blessed one day. He'll be saved. He'll be a man that will say later on in his life, God has been my shepherd all my days. Somehow he gets from here, where we're starting, to there. Somehow he becomes a man of faith and he knows God, Jacob. So the next question I want to ask is, because that's hope for us, isn't it? Jacob's can change. The next question I want to ask is, how did things change for Jacob then? If there's anyone here tonight in Jacob's position, you don't know God, you're living for yourself, and there's something wrong and you know it and you need help, how did Jacob get to that point? It's a question that's supposed to help us tonight. And I want to say, what we're going to do is we're going to zoom back, and there's this journey that Jacob goes on. And we as readers get to follow him on this journey. And it's a dramatic journey. All sorts happen. And what we're going to do, it's going to be like this whistle-stop tour through the life of Jacob. We're not going to see everything. And there's going to be probably about 2 moments where we stop and pause. But the rest of it will just be very quick. We won't even turn to the Bible verses. But there'll be 2 points where I want us to stop. And they're going to be quite very significant moments. So, firstly, where does this journey begin? Where do things start to change for Jacob? Well, he's suddenly on the run, isn't he? Because Esau, his brother, remember, who he cheated, is now out to get him. Esau wants to kill him. So Jacob is on the run for his life. And we read it, didn't we? Did you notice it in the first reading? Poor Jacob now. He's by himself. And what does he have for a pillow? A stone. He's sleeping on a stone outside by himself. And I just want to emphasize this, that that's where things really start to change for him. And I think that's very important for us tonight. Because I think that's the moment where Jacob's starting to think, I can't just do what I want. There is consequences to when I do things like this. I think he's probably starting to realize being Jacob isn't good. There is issues here with living like this. I've hurt people. I'm now running for my life. I wonder if you've had that wake-up call in your life where you've lived a certain way and it starts catching up with you. That's what is happening here for Jacob. That's where the journey begins. So just park that, think about that. But then there's a dream. And we read it, didn't we? This dream. Poor Jacob, by himself, darkness, lying on a pillow of stone. And God meets with him in a dream. Isn't that amazing? What was the dream? Do you remember it? We read it. There's this huge ladder that's somehow going all the way up to heaven. I can't even imagine how high this ladder reached. How was Jacob just lying there like this, trying to see the top? Somehow at the top of the ladder, God stands there. And there's angels going up and down this ladder. And God stands at the top and makes these promises directly to Jacob. Was that the first time that Jacob had any sense of personal dealings with God? I think so. I think this was the first moment that Jacob realized there really is a God. I think he grew up in a home that told him there's a God all the time. He heard it all the time. But I think this was the moment where he realized God's actually there. Do you know what he says? I'm going to read to you what he says. Verse 16, this is after the dream. It says, this is verse 16 of chapter 28. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. He didn't have a clue. He didn't know that God was present. And it suddenly hits him. And things start to change. Because look, verse 17. And he was afraid. He was afraid. He was deeply affected by this sudden reality of God. Do you see the switch? He knew about God before, but now it's suddenly real. God's there and God is dealing with me. And there's this ladder What's that saying to Jacob? There's a connecting point. God's up there, yes, I'm down here, but there's a way. There's a way to him. And do you know what that ladder is when you get to the New Testament? Jesus Christ says, I'm the ladder. I'm the ladder. So I think Jacob's getting a bit of a gospel teaching here. Wow, there's a way back to God from the dark paths of my sin. I think it may be, hopefully, was starting to dawn on him there. Maybe I can get to God. Maybe there's a way. So I just want to pause for a minute because I think that's a key moment in Jacob's life. And I just want to pause and ask, have you had anything of that in your life? Maybe you have grown up hearing about God for as long as you can remember. There's never a time when you did not believe that God existed. But what I want to ask tonight is there's a big difference between that and what happened here with Jacob. There is a huge difference. I can give you an example of myself. So I grew up believing in God all my life. God must be there. He must be. But do you know when things start to change for me? Like the beginning of the chain reaction for me finding him was, I've shared this before, but when I prayed in the supermarket and I basically said, God, if you're there, please show me. And there was like a direct answer. Now, God does it in different ways with different people, but let's just say there was a sudden reality. God is real and he's speaking to me. It might not be an audible, I'm not saying it's an audible voice, but have you had that realization, this God is real and he's dealing with me, he's speaking to me? Okay, I ask that because things start to change for Jacob here. Carry on reading, so chapter 28, if you're there. Verse 20, listen to what Jacob does. Then Jacob made a vow, he's making a vow to God. He's saying this, if God will be with me, and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. Now, that's great, isn't it? That's amazing. That's a big moment for Jacob. But I'm unsettled as I read that. I'm thinking as I read that, he still sounds like Jacob. He's still putting conditions. He's saying if. He's still in charge, it sounds like. So there's something happening here, but it sounds even like he's bartering with God. If he does this, then I will do this. So yes, there's something happening here, but there needs to be more because Jacob is still Jacob. So the journey must continue. What happens next? Well, the night passes, he's had his dream. Then what happens next? Have a guess. He falls in love. That's the very next thing that happens to Jacob. Picture him, he's crying and kissing this girl. He's falling in love at first sight. The birds are singing, the flowers, the sun is shining. And I think that's a key moment in the journey. It's not as important as what I was just talking about, but I think that's melting the heart of a Jacob. If Jacob's always been about himself, he's now starting to look outward. Don't discount relationships in your journey. There's all sorts that God uses. But then something else happens at the same time. He meets Laban, a man who utterly humbles Jacob. Laban is the father of this person that Jacob fell in love with. And Laban starts to play Jacob at his own game. Laban deceives the deceiver. Laban catches by the heel catcher. So you see what's happening here? A bit of poetic justice. Jacob is getting a taste of his own medicine. I think that's starting to change Jacob. Oh, this is what it feels like. This is what it feels like to be treated how I treat people. So do you see all this stuff is building up? This is Jacob's journey. I'm saying this because I'm trying to get you to think, I wonder if God's doing things like this in my life. What happens next? Well, because he was deceived by Laban, long story, I wish I could go into it. He has to get married twice. He didn't have to, but he gets married twice. He ends up marrying the girl he didn't love because of Laban's trick. So he marries the girl he does love, and now he's got two wives out of nowhere. Now, people tell me that marriage humbles you. I'll maybe find that out soon. But he's got it on a double level. He's got two wives. But then actually he ends up having four wives. And that's another long story, because the two wives he has start fighting, and then they start giving their servants to Jacob as wives because they're trying to compete for kids. Talk about a messy family life. And then people tell me that when you start to have kids, oh, that's when you start to be humbled in life. How many kids does Jacob have? 13. Eventually. Imagine how that changed things. I think what we have here is one of the messiest families in history. When you read about Jacob, it's astounding. Read it yourself when you get a chance, from chapter 30, for example. What a messy family. And again, is there people sitting here tonight with messy families, marriage problems, misbehaving kids? Just going to avoid meeting any of the kids' eyes here. That's part of his journey. He's on this journey. It's all being part of the journey. And then there's this as well. There's work. He starts working for the first time. Before, he was chilling in tents, the feet up, cooking stew. That was his life. Now he's working hard day and night for Laban, who's changing. He's working hard. Is your work hard at the moment? Are you struggling at work? Are you struggling at school? That was part of his journey. It's all part of it. God's using it to bring him to this point that he needs to get to. And then we get to this important moment, the most important. Jacob is now going to face his worst fear. What's his worst fear? Anyone been listening? Who's he most afraid of at the moment? His brother. And he's about to meet his brother. Listen to this, verse 6. This is chapter 32, verse 6. We're jumping forward now. He's left Laban. Lots has happened. And listen to this. Imagine Jacob at this point. The messengers returned to Jacob saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he's coming to meet you, the brother that wants to kill you. And there are 400 men with him." No wonder we read verse 7, Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He is petrified probably for the more than he's ever known in his life. And listen to this though, verse 9. He prays like he's never done before. Listen to this and compare it with what I said earlier about his vow. Listen to this prayer, verse 9. O God of my father, Abraham, God of my father, Isaac, O Lord, you said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. Listen to this. This is Jacob, verse 10. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of your steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. Something's happening to him. Do you hear it? All this has been wearing him down. And then listen to this. Verse 12, but you said, I will surely do you good. He's saying, Lord, you promised. I'm starting to look to your promises now. Before, I was just relying on my own scheming all the time, but I'm now starting to look to you because I'm stuck. Are you seeing what's been happening, where God's bringing him? And then verse 24, I'd say verse 24 is maybe the lowest point. This is rock bottom, verse 24 of chapter 32. I'm fast forwarding again. And Jacob was left alone. He sent everything and everyone away. Everything that he had acquired, his wives, his children, they're all gone. And it's just him. Have you had that moment before where you've been stuck, you're in this corner, and there's nowhere to turn? No one can help you. Your family, your loved ones, no one can help. It's just you. That's Jacob here. For the first time in his life, he doesn't know what to do. Step back for a minute. How would you summarize this journey of Jacob? Fun. There was high points. He fell in love. But overall, this is a humbling, painful journey, isn't it? One thing after another. I think he's been like that and he's been brought here. And that was where God was leading him all along. Now we reach, look what happens next. Verse 24 again. And Jacob was left. This is the most mysterious scene in the Bible, by the way. And this is the turning point for Jacob. Verse 24. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. A wrestling match out of nowhere. You're thinking, this is the last thing Jacob needs. He's trying to think what to do about his brother, and a man comes out of nowhere and just starts wrestling with him. And it lasts all night, until the breaking of the day when Esau's supposed to be coming. When the man, listen, verse 25, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of a joint as he wrestled with him. It seems so random, doesn't it? What's going on? What's this got to do with Jacob and everything that's going on? But it's not so random. Think of what we've learned about Jacob. Jacob has been wrestling his whole life. He's been going through opponent after opponent. But this opponent is different. This is the first opponent he's face to face with. All the other stuff he's been doing is sneaking up on people. This is the first time he's facing someone confrontational, face to face. And this is the first time he's been defeated. He's been defeated. And it's what an embarrassing defeat. Let me read that again. They wrestled all night. It seemed like a fair match. They're all night, hours. Just imagine it. They were wrestling for hours. It was fair. And then suddenly, the man who's wrestling him just does that. Touches his hip. And Jacob's lost. His hip's out of joint. He's lost in a second. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when you play against kids in football. So imagine I lined up all these kids here and it was just me against you. What I would probably do is I'd let you think you're winning for about 9 goals. Then I'll start playing properly and beat you 10-9. That's probably what would happen because I'm still quite good at football. Now that's what I think happened here. Jacob was led to think he was winning and then, how embarrassing. Jacob just been put in his place by this man. And then we find out, who's this man? Verse 30. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face. Jacob was wrestling with God. The God who made the universe somehow has come to earth as a man to wrestle. And you're thinking, why? What's the goal in all of this? The goal is verse 28 to 29. God had asked Jacob, what's your name, Jacob? Tell me what you're like. I'm Jacob. I'm the deceiver. God says, verse 28, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. Everything that has happened up until this point in Jacob's life was for that goal. All the pain, all the heartbreak, all the tears, all the humbling, all the wrestling, all the despair was to bring him to this point where he is finally changed from his Jacobness and he's blessed. Isn't that such an important lesson for us tonight? You might be sitting there thinking, why is all this happening in my life? Why am I suffering? Why did that event happen to me at that time? Why is there so much pain? I can't work it out. What's God doing? I thought he was good. Now, there's many answers to that question, but I think one of the answers is here, that God, through all these things we're going through, is preparing us to meet him and humble us so that when we do meet him, we will cling on for the blessing. Because as long as I'm Jacob and remain Jacob, I will never be blessed. Because Jacob's only look to Jacob. To be blessed, you need to look to the one who blesses. So the whole goal of everything that was happening here was for this purpose. So maybe, could it be that God is doing all these things in your life to bring you to this point, to wear you down from your self-reliance, to show you the reality of your sin, to push you into such a corner where all you can turn to is him? Could it be that that's what he's doing for you? This truth is so helpful for us, I think, as we look at the mess of our lives. What we're witnessing here, I think, in picture form, is the journey of someone to finding Christ and becoming a Christian. That's ultimately what's happening here. Yes, it's different in its details because my story is different to your story. But it always takes this kind of shape, always does. And that's why I just want to zoom into one more bit. It's the bit we've already looked at, but I want to just take a closer look. Because so far we've seen the whole journey, haven't we? But I want to zoom in to what happened that night when he really was blessed. I think we need to zoom in. It's one thing taking a general look, but what was it particularly that led to his name being changed? What was it particularly that led to him being blessed? Let's read it. Let's rewind a bit and freeze the frame. Verse 25. Remember their wrestling? Verse 25. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket and Jacob's hip was put out of joint when he wrestled him. So he's lost, right? Verse 26. God says to Jacob, let me go, for the day is broken. You've lost, Jacob. Let me go now. I'm the victor. What does Jacob do? This is the bit I really want to zoom in on. Does Jacob say, okay, God, your will be done? Yes. He says, no, I will not let you go until you bless me. It was that moment from then on that Jacob was blessed. And I think that's saying something to us here. I think it's almost like God zooming in and that saying, that's what it takes. That's what does it. Think about what Jacob's doing here. He's literally holding on to God and he's clingy. He's clinging and he's clingy. Now we say someone's clingy in a relationship and it's normally a negative thing, isn't it? They're relying on me too much. It's not a nice thing when we say, oh, they're a bit clingy. God doesn't say that about us. He wants us to be clingy. He wants us to cling on to him like this. And that's what I think the message is here. It was only when he got to this point that his name was changed. Did you notice that? I think that is so important here. It's given us a message. And when you think about it, no wonder it's this point. Because I think as you look at Jacob in that moment and he's holding on to God and he's saying, I won't let you go, God, until you bless me. I think that's the moment where he least looks like Jacob. He's the least self-sufficient he's ever been. He's the least proud he's ever been. And he's the most at the end of himself that he's ever been. And I think as we look at him doing that, I think that's one of the most beautiful pictures of what faith is. Faith is this thing where you are holding on to God. There's nothing in me. There's nothing I can look to in here. I'm at the end of myself and you are my only hope. That's faith. I'm going to try and make this as clear as possible. We're seeing a man here in this scene, Jacob, whose only hope in that moment was the man in front of him. That's what we're seeing here. And who's the man in front of him? It's God, yes. But who is he particularly? Christ. I believe that that man wrestling with Jacob was what we call a pre-incarnate Christ, which means Jesus before he became a man, the Son of God before he became a man. So if we think about it, Jacob's holding on to Jesus. Isn't that the Christian? What's the thing that defines us? What's the thing that defines Israel, his new name? Holding on to Jesus as my only hope. That's what I think the Christian is. That's the separating factor. All they can do is ask Jesus to bless them. They've got no hope in themselves. All they can do is look to him and what he did on the cross for their sins. They've got all these sins. They're like Jacob. But their only hope is, I can't clear these sins. My only hope is this man, Jesus, and what he did on the cross. And they cling and they cling and they cling. And even when it looks like God is saying no, they refuse and they hold tighter because he's their only hope. That's faith. That's the Christian. And what I love is you see this, I'm going to call it Israel DNA. You see this Israel DNA all over scripture. I could give you loads of examples. Moses, I will refuse until you go with us. There's David, I read to you at the beginning. My soul thirsts for you. I so need you, it's like a thirst. I could give you a Canaanite woman. Jesus says, no, I'm not going to give the blessing to you. She comes again and again, she's holding. I think there's something there here. Okay, Let's apply this. I believe this is so helpful. Christians first. Let's just have a quick thought for Christians from this. I think this is asking us, am I still clinging to Jesus? Have I loosened my grip a bit? Have I gone back to my Jacob ways? I'm still a Christian. I'm still doing Christian stuff, but I've kind of slipped back into this self-reliance that I had before. And I'm kind of casual and I'm coasting. And I don't need God really. I don't need him day to day. I'm not clinging anymore. Could that be the reason why we know so little of him? Maybe so little blessing? Because it says, and there he blessed him. As a pattern. Thank God he blesses us when we don't cling on as well. But there is this something to do with this faith and holding on. And it's easy to do, isn't it? It's easy to be like Jacob because Jacob remains in me and I live in a Jacob world surrounded by Jacobs. And we live in a Western society that is so comfortable, at ease. I don't need to look to God for anything, really. I've got my food on my table. I've got my earnings. I'm forgiven. So I kind of go through life a bit like Jacob. I'm not holding on to God anymore. I think a good test to see if that is me is prayer. It's always prayer, isn't it? Because Jacob's praying when he says, I will not let you go. Prayer is a good test for this because if I don't pray, I'm like Jacob because Jacobs don't pray. When I don't pray, I'm saying to God, I don't need you. I've got this. So that's Jacob. So I think prayer life will be the clue. And it's not just do I pray, it's do I pray? Do I look to God to actually answer me? Or am I just saying prayers to kind of tick a box and say I've said my prayers? I'm talking about this I will not let you go kind of praying. That's what I think this is talking about. So that's a short, just a thought for Christians here. But obviously, I think this is so helpful for anyone here that has yet to truly find the Lord. Because maybe you're a bit like Jacob. Maybe you're familiar. You know all the right answers when it comes to this stuff. Yep, Jesus died for sinners. Yep, I believe all of that. You kind of believe it in your head. Maybe you've even had a taste of that Bethel experience you had where, wow, God's real. He's actually real. And maybe you've even had that. That's great. But you're still not yet clinging. You're not holding on with your life. You haven't come in that way yet. You don't really see how bad you are at heart. You haven't quite seen how serious your situation is. You haven't quite grasped the reality of hell. If you did, you would run to God and hold on and refuse to let him go until he answers you. So I think this is so helpful for you. This is essentially asking you, how much do you want to be saved? Is Jesus your only hope? There is a promise that God gives in his word. You will find me when you seek me with all your heart. So I'm going to close now. And I want us to remember something as I close. Who was it that came to wrestle with who? Jacob didn't start it. It was God. A man came to wrestle with him. In fact, it was God who led every step of Jacob's way to get to that very point he got to that night. And God still does the same thing today. God is coming after Jacob's tonight. He's coming to wrestle with Jacob's tonight. And maybe, just maybe, he's coming to your path right now. And he's confronting you to your face. And he wants to stop you in your Jacob tracks, which are leading to this horrible destruction. And he's stopping you in your path. And he's saying, no further, no further. And he's come to bless you. It seems like he's come to fight you, as it did for Jacob. But he's really coming to bless you. But in order to bless you, he has to pin you down out of your self-will and self-reliance. So I'm going to ask a very simple question. Will you stop fighting him? Will you finally accept defeat? Will you finally surrender and hold up the white flag? Will you finally say, your way, not mine? Will you finally confess, I'm Jacob, I need you to bless me, I'm a sinner? And even if God seems to say, let me go, will you hold on tighter and say, I will not let you go until you bless me? I could fill in the blanks for anyone here. I will not let you go until you save me. I will not let you go until you give me assurance that I'm saved. I will not let you go until you save my unruly child. I will not let you go until dot, 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 dot. Will we come and hold on to God as our only hope? There is no hope outside of Christ. Hold on to him and him alone.